You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 22nd June. I'm Simon Brown coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. We had Chinese loan prime rate earlier this morning, essentially their prime rate unchanged. On the show today, chatting with Nick Kunze, Sanlam Private Wealth. Naspers process, trading updates on Friday. But I mean, these are two stocks that have been under massive pressure since those highs, back in October. Keen to get thoughts around that. And gold, we're also seeing pressure on the gold price. Thoughts around that. We're going to chat with Andre Tuck, Senior Investment Consultant, 10X, Common Retirement Planning Mistakes. And then we're going to chat with Simply Financial Services, Risks of Staff Illness on Small Business in South Africa. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Inflation expectations are rising, says the SARB. Reserve Bank Governor says US-Iran deal left considerable uncertainty. Business day, central banks eye more gold as Iran war jolts markets. World Gold Council survey finds reserve managers expect stronger bullion buying and reduced dollar holdings. Morning markets. US has closed Friday for Juneteenth. Over in the east, we're mixed. Sydney is down a couple of points. Tokyo is up 2%. Hong Kong off almost 1%, and Tencent down 0.75%. Commodities mostly green. Gold futures 4,196. Brent is a little bit red at 79.37. Platinum 1,684. Palladium unchanged. 1,272. The rand is 16.43. Bitcoin 64,200. And top 40 opening call, a green open, 40 points, 0.4% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Nick Kunze, Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, appreciate the early morning time. Naspers process, the trading update. I mean, they talk a lot. And I mean, for structure, process is a subsidiary of Naspers. They're now more than just Tencent, and they go to a lot of pains to point that out. Although, truthfully, Tencent still is the giant one in the stable there. And both process and Naspers been under serious selling pressure the last 6, 7, 8 months.
Yeah, morning, Simon. I mean, very, very frustrating share for shareholders, Naspers process. I mean, yeah, I mean, I walked in this morning, Tencent down again. I mean, it's just not getting any of a sort of AI tech sort of frenzy. I mean, it's again, Tencent, almost down to 52-week low. Mm. Yeah, trading update, Naspers process. I mean, it's a bit of a non-event. I mean, they already guided the e-commerce. Tencent results are known. Does come a little bit light, I think, in most people's consensus. But I think it is positive, and they've mentioned it over and over again. I think we need to mention it. I mean, all those e-commerce regions that are being profitable. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess investor focus now on the results. That's next week, Monday. Just have a look at how deep the investment needs to be into that iFood business and in South America. But overall, I know, just frustrating, isn't it? I mean, this persistent discount to that Tencent and this whole AI rally, as I said already, it's just not participating.
Yeah, and maybe it is that. Maybe they're tech, they're great tech. And we did see that run when they announced that I think it was FT who said that Tencent was going to, sorry, WeChat was going to bring AI in. Maybe it's that. They're not part of the AI thing. Something that isn't AI is gold. I mean, it's the, you know, yellow lumps of metal. I mean, it's sold off. And I mean, a bit weird, but I mean, we do see when things get wobbly, correlations all go to one, everything gets sold. Gold, no different. Is there an opportunity here for folks who kind of missed it? I mean, gold's also, it's back at what? I was going to say last year. It's only back at October prices. Mm. But, I mean, maybe a bit of a second chance.
Yeah, I think I'd lean more towards that. I mean, I think, Simon, there's possibly, I guess, two, three things going on at once here. I mean, and they're all sort of adding on to each other. I mean, one is obviously the stronger dollar. I mean, that Dixie back over 100. Yeah. I mean, that's obviously the dominant mechanical driver. And, of course, you've got Mr. Trump's new pick, Mr. Walsh. He suddenly all of a sudden turned uber hawkish. That wasn't part of the plan. And I guess also central banks are net buyers in aggregate this year. The pace has slowed down a little bit from the last couple of years. I mean, I've seen some headlines, Turkey and Russia, they've been actually selling down to defend their currencies. The third one is probably the best documented one, is investors have been rotating out of their winners into gold, into that irritating AI trade, haven't they? Freeing up cash, getting liquidity, and selling the last couple of years' winners. Gold is probably one of them. So you put all these things together. Gold's under a lot of pressure, but I would hesitate to say it's looking for an entry point. It's probably looking quite interesting right here.
Yeah, and to your point, it has doubled. I'm on a 3-year chart here, and it has doubled since that period. But I like the point that you allude to there, which is there's a finite amount of cash, and we saw it, I think, to a degree when Tesla arrived. You got to sell something to find the money to buy the Tesla type of thing. So not Tesla, SpaceX. There is finite cash in the market.
And Simon, there's more coming. I mean, you've got Anthropic coming. You've got OpenAI. So they're going to need to find liquidity to find these monster IPOs. And it's got to come somewhere.
It's got to come somewhere. And to your point, at least another, billion each on those two, if not even more. Nick Kunze, Portfolio Manager, Sunland Private Wealth. Appreciate the early morning. And that's our poll today on LinkedIn, is back to that NASPAS process. They really have sold off since September, quite aggressively on both. Opportunity here, or maybe you consider it justified. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for 3 decades.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting with Andrea Tuck, Senior Investment Consultant, 10X Investments. Andrea, I appreciate the early morning time. Thinking around retirement and the fact that a vast majority of South Africans, 90-odd% are going to struggle in their retirement. Recent note that you put out, you talk around, it's seldom a single big decision that makes an impact on our retirement. It's actually a lot of smaller decisions that we make along the way and when we get to retirement.
That is correct. Morning, Simon. The challenge is rarely a single decision, as you've just alluded to. It's often a combination of insufficient savings, high fees, unrealistic retirement expectations, poor drawdown decisions that compound over time, and also the cost of living and cost in retirement that plays a crucial role.
And one of them, and there are some big decisions when we get to retirement. In fact, perhaps some of the biggest decisions we have to make is around that living versus guaranteed annuity. The one guaranteed is essentially an insurance product. It will pay us out according to the T's and C's. The living is an investment product. And these are irreversible decisions that we need to make.
Definitely correct. The life annuity pays a guaranteed income for life.
Yeah.
The insurer carries the investment and longevity risk, but you do not have flexibility. The living annuity keeps your money invested and gives you control over how it's allocated. And obviously, you've got a flexibility of the drawdown between 2.5% and 17.5% per annum, which you can change once a year. But there's also a downside to that. Mm-hmm. If you draw too much too soon, or your investments underperform, you know, there's sideways or a downturn in markets in the early years, that will have a negative impact. You know, many people make the call based on what works right now, a higher initial income or the appeal of flexibility, without considering what that decision might mean later in life.
Yeah, I get your point on that. Absolutely. It's thinking around, I mean, to the point being, hitting retirement, we're potentially living, I don't know, 20, 30 years. This isn't a couple of rounds of golf and it's all done. There's drawdown rates also matter because, you know, it might be attractive to push it higher, particularly when we're early into retirement. We want to go and do all those things we couldn't do. There's holidays and all of that sort of stuff. But it is to be careful to keep it, keep a drawdown around 5%.
Definitely. You know, that was studies that's based in the U.S., and that we also need to factor in what's applicable to the African market and South African context specifically. So we've seen a lot of financial advisors now sticking to the 4% rule, because we draw too much early on, that can come back to haunt you later on. So that discussion is a very hard discussion to have, 5% or 4% or less. Many clients do take this very, very seriously, and they do that. The ones that don't, it comes back to bite them.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, you made a point in the article you wrote that retirement, we always think that retirement's going to be cheaper. And in some ways it is. Look, firstly, I'm not saving for retirement anymore. So there's that saving. But there are other costs. There's, I mentioned, we want to have fun. Eventually, your healthcare costs. I mean, healthcare is going to be later in life a huge burden on your potential savings.
Definitely. I mean, there's an assumption that your costs are lower in retirement. It's one of the most damaging myths in financial planning. You know, we've seen that non-communicable disease, healthcare costs increase with age. You know, there are three stages. The early years of retirement, it tends to be the most expensive. You travel, spend money on leisure, lifestyle, you know, and then there's the quieter middle period. And then at the end, it's a sharp and often expected rise in care-related healthcare issues that we need to already, if you retire from 60, 63, 65, already need to plan accordingly.
Yeah, it is. I like that. There's actually different stages in it. You mentioned upfront fees. Fees, you know, we understand fees. When we're, you know, investing and saving for our retirement, fees matter. Fees still matter in retirement, and particularly in a guaranteed annuity, it's a different kettle of fish. But in a living annuity, there are fees, and those fees are still hugely important.
Definitely. Fees are a silent killer of wealth. They're also the most underestimated variable in this whole retirement planning process because it's the most difficult to clearly see because they're so layered. Mm. You know, far fewer understand the full impact of cost on product and platform and financial advisor. It's, you know, the fees are not always visible on your statements, which is why exactly it does so much damage over time. So one needs to ask for that EAC, effective annual cost, from your financial planner when you go into retirement on your living annuity. What is the layers of cost so you clearly understand it from day one?
That EAC, effective annual cost, that is apples with apples. Everyone's going to come back with the same bundle of fees. The numbers will be different, but what's included enables us to give good comparison, and that's the key point of that EAC.
That's 100% correct. That's 100%. I think it's very important that one, scrutinizes and asks that very important question. I've seen too many times client comes back 3, 5, 6 months later, I didn't understand there was initial financial advice fee that came off my investment, but now it's already been done. So you've got to ask those questions. Ask the questions, the hard questions, and then you have peace of mind if you understand them.
Yeah. And it comes back to the point we made earlier. There's a lot of big decisions to be made here. We need to make them smart. We need to make them smart the first time. And ask the questions. If you're not sure, ask and then ask and ask until it does start to make sense. We'll leave it there. It's Andre Taki, Senior Investment Consultant, 10X Investments. Appreciate the early morning. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Standard Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Anthony Miller. He's CEO at Simply Financial Services. Anthony, appreciate the early morning time. It's tough out there right now. You put out an article recently, and it actually reads a bit like a bit of a horror show. Petrol, prime rates, inflation, everything else is squeezing us. But you also make the point that one of the questions every employer needs to be asking is if a staff member becomes sick, can't work, what happens to the business? There's a risk assessment conversation that is perhaps not being had by a lot of the smaller businesses out there.
Simon, thanks so much for having me. I think there's a big misunderstanding in South Africa about how affordable it is to provide good benefits to staff generally. You know, typically these things are very kind of limited to large corporates, but SMEs typically don't have anything. And, in a business with 7 or 8 staff, if someone, unfortunately gets a critical illness like cancer or is temporarily disabled, generally the responsibility falls on the employer. And that's something that people don't plan for. So that was really what we were referencing.
Yeah, and it is. And I take your point. You know, in a big corporate, you've got, I don't know, thousands, hundreds of staff. You've got an HR department of 7 or 8 people. Never mind that's the full complement at a small business. It is typically considered more difficult, more expensive for those smaller businesses. But you're saying, hang on, there's a space here. And this is a fintech story in many senses.
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, you know, the reality is group risk benefits are available to any company. Historically, it's been hard for smaller businesses to access them because it just hasn't been worthwhile either for, you know, businesses to sell directly or for brokers to sell.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just haven't really focused on it. Historically, you'd need a group of, say, 20 people in order for anyone to want to provide cover. But technology actually makes it much easier now for those kinds of, you know, products and services to be provided into the market. So, you know, many of those structural constraints are actually now gone.
You say group risk benefits. What are group risk benefits for the novices out there?
Group risk benefits are basically risk benefits, so life or disability or income protection. Mm-hmm. That are provided to a group as opposed to provided to an individual. And they have various risk advantages from a provider's perspective. So, for example, there tends to be less fraud. There's some pooling of risk that means that overall the risk is lower.
Mm.
And the result of that is that the costs are significantly lower if benefits are provided via an employer than if they're provided directly.
I want to come to that costs in the process in a moment, but it's also, and it comes to your earlier point, is that it takes the pressure off the business if one of your staff in a small business, you know, it needs one of the claims, whatever it might be. It just removes that pressure from the business and says this is kind of like, I don't want to say it's solved because someone is ill out there, but financially the problem is not the challenge.
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, that's often the reason that we find employers buying cover is that they want to be able to say to their staff, look, A, we care about you. Mm-hmm. We're saving you money. But importantly for them, if something happens, they know that that's going to be taken care of. And there's not going to be a big moral question around what do we do?
Yeah. And it's pricing and process. I mean, you've mentioned pricing and that's part of that group part of the process. It's also process. I mean, small businesses don't have HR teams. This, I imagine, would be part of the service, almost a kind of like a virtual kind of HR team.
Yeah, exactly. So what we try to do, and there are other providers out there, what we try to do is to take the admin burden away from employers completely. And that's for, you know, smaller businesses, but also very large, let's say, blue-collar employers where there's quite a lot of turnover. There's a lot of admin associated with things like collecting beneficiary information. And the reality is, in 2026, it's actually very easy to build technology solutions to solve things. You know, for example, using WhatsApp to help collect beneficiary information or integrating with an employer's payroll system so that if employment changes, you know, the policy automatically updates. So those are the kind of things that you know, that's out there now that makes these things much easier.
Gotcha. I hadn't actually thought of that. There is a whole bunch out there, which is just the sort of the small admin stuff that is so hugely critically important. Is there? I mean, to what sort of size? I mean, we talk around the giant companies that have got their own sort of HR and stuff and can manage it. But if you're running a small business, I mean, at what sort of size point does this become? Perhaps we put it the other way around. How big does your company need to be before this is sort of no longer viable and you need your own HR? I mean, is this a 20, a 50? I mean, imagine even potentially a 100-person business could benefit from something like this and use the fintech and the technology, as you say.
Yeah, I mean, we've actually got some employers with more than 1,000 staff that use us.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is, you know, whether you've got the team or not, you prefer not to have humans doing work that can easily be picked up by technology.
Yeah.
So you can imagine, you know, in a business doing 1,000, you know, a business with 1,000 staff, in a relatively high turnover environment like business process outsourcing, if you have 150 staff turning over every year, there's a lot of admin associated with adding them, removing them, collecting their beneficiaries, making sure you know who their family members are, etc. And technology can do a good job of that. So, you know, our goal is to make this easy for anyone from a sole proprietor to a large employer to provide good benefits to their staff. You know, it really can save staff members up to 80-90% on funeral cover. So
yeah,
it's a really big opportunity for, you know, protection in South Africa.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. I mean, size is not perhaps the barrier. It still is just going to be cheaper and more efficient, and that's really what we're looking for. Anthony Miller, we'll leave it there. CEO, Simply Financial Services. Appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. We were chatting with Mateta Tolari on Friday. He from Investec, talking about the Rand. It weakened on that hawkish FOMC meeting on Wednesday of last week. We asked you if you thought the currency could get back below 16 against the dollar. Around 40% each said in time, most definitely. Another 40-odd percent saying Rand's just too unpredictable. The rest were saying, nope, the US is just looking strong. And the US dollar is looking strong. Nick mentioned it there this morning. The DXY is certainly back above 100. Have your say, have your vote, LinkedIn. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobukle, Nicole, Sabu, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. An FX strategy cannot just be reactive.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.